Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Helen Dunn. Helen, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Lovely. It's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
Likewise, under difficult circumstances, but we were mentioning yesterday that the fifth anniversary of the beginning of COVID, the first lockdown, began in early March in 2020, and people were reminiscing about the impact they've had on, and also using the occasion, I suppose, for the first time to talk about the impact. It's your mother, Claire, who died in January 21.
Yeah, Joe, and when I heard it yesterday, I was like, it's actually the first time I've actually kind of heard people talking about the people who've died in COVID. It seems like a long time ago, but it's still very raw. And I think for anybody like myself that's lost close family, you know, it's still very raw. You know, we didn't get the closure a lot of people get, we'll say, at funerals. I did lose my dad in 2004, and I have, you know, a direct comparison, we'll say, regarding funerals. In 2004, my dad died, Paddy Dunn, he got all the bells and whistles, you know, for his funeral, whereas compared to my mum, there was 10 people in the church, and it was eerie. It was very eerie. And I think I was even speaking to your researcher earlier. One of the things that stands out for me during Mam's funeral, you know, there was only 10 of us. I did the eulogy, and I remember it was the undertaker that started the clapping. You know, it was eerie because obviously, you know, my family were there too, but they were all upset. And the undertaker has never probably clapped really before. He kind of got away with it. You know, he got going with his next job as opposed to being one of the main spectators. And people,
and it's worth remembering. Just under 10,000 people died.
Yeah,
of COVID.
Like, and that's a lot of people.
Yeah, 30% of them died in nursing homes. About 13% were in hospitals, and then obviously the rest, including homes and other locations. 10,000 is it? And did you even have any type of wake or? You couldn't, sure you couldn't.
No, we couldn't. Mam was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in September. So between the time she was diagnosed and the time she died, it was only 14 weeks. And we, as a family, I have two brothers, we decided we're not going to put Mam into a hospital or a care home or a nursing home. Okay. We decided ourselves, we're going to keep her ourselves. So we all of our bosses were amazing. We reduced our hours. And between the three of us, one of us was with Mam every hour from the time she was diagnosed to the time she died.
Wow.
And, you know, because you wouldn't be able to see her. If she went into a hospital or a nursing home, you'd be dressed up in PPE and you wouldn't be able to see her when you wanted to see her. So we took that decision ourselves and, you know, we don't have any regrets that way. But it was a funny, funny time. And she was an amazing woman. She was from Portlaoise. Her name was Claire Dunn. She was, her maiden name was Fennel, which is a very popular name in Portlaoise. It did a big family down there. She was a dental nurse in the Midland Health Board, so she was very well known. She worked with the kids there. She was a set dancer. She was a pioneer. We all knew about that within 5 minutes of talking to her. She was a very avid pioneer and never drank in her life. And, you know, Even talking now, I feel I'm doing her justice because I did her eulogy. But
and then that was also the time which it began, Helen, the whole thing of people watching, which still exists.
Yeah.
A change, people watching masses on them, on their laptop or indeed on their...
But, it, you didn't get the comfort of the stories. You never knew about the person that you missed and loved. You know, we missed all those stories that you have at funerals and the tears and the laughter, you know.
But it does.
We didn't get that.
Not for you, but for a lot of people.
No.
As I said yesterday, it's like planet COVID. It's like a lifetime ago.
It is. And, you know, it feels like a life let me go. But, you know, I remember it minute by minute. It's so real. But it is years. It's years ago. And I'm so thankful, Joe, that you brought it up yesterday. When I heard it on the radio, it brought a tear to my eye, but it also brought a smile, because you don't want them to be forgotten.
And I know there's an inquiry promised, but it seems to be a long time coming. An inquiry should hopefully about lame and learning, not blaming. Stay with us, Helen. Robbie Moore, good afternoon. Robbie's in Balbriggan.
Hey, Joe, how's things?
Oh, good. Your mother, Peggy.
Yeah. She died October 1. And she didn't have COVID. My ma had dementia, and she had an aneurysm in the heart. And she got real sick in September. And the doctor said to her, look, she needs to go into a nursing home to be looked after properly before sharing among ourselves.
It's a terrible line, Robbie, unfortunately. But your mother didn't have COVID, but the COVID lockdown affected everybody, affected everyone in hospital, everyone in a nursing home, everyone, most jobs shut down, pubs, restaurants, factories, unbelievable lockdown. But it affected so many people who didn't have COVID. So your mother died in 2020.
2021.
Okay, I'm gonna have to try and get a better line. Stay with us, Robbie. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, when I mentioned the figure 10,000 there to Helen, to put it in perspective, the town of Kildare has a population of 10,000. The town of Ballina in Mayo has a population of 10,000. Tramore, County Waterford, 10,000. Dungarvan, County Waterford, 10,000. Indeed, there's only 49 towns in the country that have a population over 10,000. So it's a very significant number of people who died because of COVID during the pandemic, which began 5 years ago in earnest in terms of the lockdowns. Jerry Dunn, Jerry, this was mentioned yesterday, the whole issue of smell.
Yes, Joe. Hi. I'll tell you, I was never actually diagnosed with COVID. But because the rules had changed in March 2020, that you had to have a fever, sore throat, headache, cough. I had none of the above, but I lost my smell and taste. It was just unbelievable to describe to people that you couldn't smell a thing and you couldn't taste anything. Everything tasted like cardboard.
Yeah.
I tried to put chili flakes on everything, salt, nothing. Dinners with family were just dreadful. They were all tucking into this beautiful dinner. I was there with my toasted ham and cheese sandwich. It was awful. I just couldn't taste anything or smell. And then the smell came back to a degree, but it came back absolutely in an appalling way that it was like wet dog. So everything and everyone... I could stand next to somebody and they smelled. My partner's reeked of garlic for 3 days. Oh, my God. I will never forget it. I couldn't eat garlic, peppers. I couldn't stand to be in the room with them. So I did the usual, went to my GP. My GP was great. Decided to do the smells of eucalyptus, cloves, oranges. 3 times a day, nothing worked. I went back, she said to me, do you know what, maybe if you try acupuncture, that might work.
Okay.
So I went to acupuncture and Tamar, that didn't work. So unrelated to anything, in October of 22, this is like 2 3/4 years later, I went to an advanced physiotherapist here in Waterford for a lower back problem. Mm-hmm. And after he literally aligned me, took pictures, whatever, and assessed where he had put pressure points for my back problem.
Okay.
And my alignment was actually, I was all out.
Yeah,
my alignment, yeah. All out. I was like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, really. I was all
okay.
out. And and he, after 10 sessions, he aligned me again and took the photos again diagnostically. And I was much more in tune with myself, back into my proper
okay.
correct space. And within a week, I had regained my smell.
And you had regained, the smell had aligned with the actual smells that you were smelling.
I
if
have
you
no
me.
Idea. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, exactly.
You weren't smelling wet dog
again.
All the time.
No, I wasn't smelling wet dog, garlic, awful. I just couldn't believe the impact this
okay.
had on my
now,
life.
Now, Jerry, just go back. 51551, joe@rt.ie. Go back. Did you wake up one morning and you had no sense of smell?
No, literally, I walked into the kitchen one morning in March 2020 and I said to my partner, oh, what are you cooking?
Mm.
And it was black pudding.
No.
Now, I mean, that smells strong.
Sure does.
And I could not smell it at all. And then I went around the house sniffing all sorts of perfumes and fluid and all sorts of things and nothing.
Oh,
absolutely
wow.
nothing. And I was wondering why things didn't taste properly in those couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so...
So how long were you
really
without the proper sense of smell?
Until from March 2020 to October 2022.
Okay, and effectively the lockdowns ended in January, or the beginning of
mm-hmm.
February 2022. So it was nearly mm-hmm. 8 or 9 months after the pandemic as such.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
did, you did get it back. Now, you put it down to, even though your physiotherapist says, no, it wasn't me, I'm not claiming
yeah,
credit.
Yeah, exactly.
But you put mm-hmm. it down to around the time you had all the pushing and shoving and pulling and
flustering. Yeah, exactly.
And is your smell back now completely?
My smell is back completely, so much so that I can sniff anything out. I should be in Dublin Airport sniffing stuff out. It is completely, it's hypersensitive.
Okay. If you're under 50, Jerry, you can apply to join the guards. They'd be glad to have you.
Oh, I wish I was. I'm 50 plus fast now, Joe. But the taste, sorry, go on.
No, just it sounds awful.
It was
losing the sense of smell.
It was absolutely horrendous, and you can't describe it to anybody because people
yeah.
around you are having these beautiful dishes full of garlic and peppers, and your stomach is just turning. And I just couldn't partake in anything for basically 2¾ years.
Later.
I couldn't enjoy food, but thankfully, I don't know. Excuse me, my physiotherapist says, oh, no, it's not down to me at all. It was just, you know. But my doctor said that this could have been neurological. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I was aligned back properly. I have no idea.
So, but the message
no
is,
idea.
For the caller yesterday, there is hope.
Mm.
There is hope.
There is absolutely hope because I did meet people along the way, you know, because I Googled and joined some varying, mm-hmm. you know, Facebook things and whatever, that people lost it maybe for 2 or 3 days, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and they got it back. And I was going, oh, God, I wish that was me. I was really wish that was me.
And did you wake up every morning mm-hmm. in the hope?
Absolutely.
Ah.
Absolutely. And I was at one point, because I have an autoimmune disease, I have lupus, and I was thinking, possibly, did it affect me worse? But I don't think so. You know, so, yeah. And thankfully, that man, poor man yesterday, he's in the same boat that I don't know. But as I said, you know, the physiotherapist, the advanced physiotherapist,
it came back. It came back. And it came back properly, if not with greater sensitivity.
Oh, my goodness, I could tell you, if I was standing next to you, what you had last night for your dinner, this morning for your breakfast.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, by standing next to people, it's just unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. And heightened totally.
Stay with us, Jerry. Joe at RT.ie 51551. Robbie is back there on WhatsApp.
I am, Joe, yeah.
You see, it's the little things. Like you say, one of our... This is, again, hard to believe for people to believe. One of the benefits of the nursing home that your mother was in was that it was all on ground level, so you could see in through a window.
That's right. We used to walk around to her window and talk to her through the window. Yeah. I never ever thought I'd see anything like that. I was saying to Rachel this morning there, when I got the phone call about this COVID thing coming in, I was away playing golf on Paddy's weekend with my friends, and we were coming back from Galway.
Okay.
And the wife rang me and she hurry home, she said, the whole place closing down at 6 o'clock. And I said, ah, yeah, don't worry about that, Helen. I said, and oh no, she really mean it. She said, the Taoiseach is after announcing it, and that's it, she said. Because we were actually supposed to go away that night, the Sunday night, down to Mullingar.
Yeah.
And that was planned. And of course, that was all knocked on the head. She packed and unpacked on the one day. But Mum got an aneurysm, and the hospital said, no, she needs more care. And you wouldn't be able to do it at home. So she was 7 weeks, 8 weeks in the nursing home. The first 2 weeks was grand. But then the visiting restrictions changed. So we all just had to go down and look in the window and chat to her. It was very hard, Joe. Very hard.
For people to remember, when Leo Varadkar happened to be in Washington at the time, Donald Trump was president, and he made the announcement at around, I think around 10 o'clock Irish, from the steps of the Pennsylvania, I think across from the White House and Pennsylvania Avenue. But schools closed within the hour.
That's right, yeah.
Children, everything shut down within the hour. This wasn't, we're worried we might have to make contingency plans in a few weeks. This was here and now. And events were cancelled, schools were cancelled, children were sent home, and of course the rush began to the supermarkets for the Brennan's bread and the toilet rolls. I don't mean to be facetious, but in a little thing like the fact that your mother's nursing home was on the ground level meant that everyone could stand at a window and look in and say hello to their mother. Now, Robbie, did your mother, did she worry about getting COVID?
Well, she couldn't understand because she had dementia.
Okay.
And she just said to herself, oh, come on in. Like, I don't have that thing they're saying that's out there. Like, she didn't understand it.
And she didn't realise that you could bring it into her.
She didn't understand that.
And who did manage to see your mum before she passed?
My twin brother seen her on the Friday evening, and I was booked in to see her for 10 o'clock on the Saturday morning, and the twin brother rang me at 9:30 to say she died.
Oh, God rest her.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the funeral.
Not nice, Joe.
I know the funeral was limited, to say the least.
It was, yeah, but wasn't as bad as 2020. Like, our immediate family and then our good neighbours, me mum's good neighbours, they all stood out in the road when the hearse went by.
And that was another phenomenon of COVID, that if somebody died during COVID, obviously the church was basically
restricted,
very restricted. But somebody came up with the idea, which is a lovely idea. I don't know if it still persists. I know there's been a development in the last few years that people living on the same street or road as the deceased, but put a ribbon, I don't know whether you notice this, or a balloon or whatever, in their front garden. Well, it's a phenomenon in Dublin. I don't know if it began in COVID, but the hearse would travel down the road, which it normally did anyway, but that people, neighbours would come out, stand apart and applaud the hearse. That's something that started during COVID
The whole way from my mum's house to the church would be about 3 kilometres, and all along the houses on the way up, there was people standing out.
Incredible. Yeah. I'll go back to Helen for a sec. Helen, this image, Joe. This image is still in my head of you doing the delivering the eulogy for your mother. Are you an only child or an only daughter?
No, I have two brothers. I have one older and one younger. But I'm even thinking as well, like mam was from Belgrove, Ballybritis, County Laois, but you know, it was even country roads. It was the exact same. People came out of their houses, stood outside the gates and clapped, went in, sat on their couch, watched the funeral on a couch, had a cup of tea, came back out once the funeral is over and kind of gave her a clap on the way down to the funeral as well, down to the graveyard, you know. It was a country. But another thing as well that I feel we kind of missed out on was the wake. I mean, I never made a cup of tea for anybody at the wake, you know. I can count on one hand the amount of people that came to the house because you didn't know what to do. You didn't know whether you should go to the house, call to the house, look in through a window. You know, I never made a ham sandwich. I never made a cup of tea. And even, you know, you share kind of the hours, you know, during a wake time as well for 3 nights.
And
it was me and my two brothers that sat in the house on our own. A trickle of close family came through. But we, you know, we had her to ourselves, but we would have liked.
Yeah, the wake is a very.
The madness in the house that goes with a wake.
I
feel we missed that as well.
An Irish phenomenon. And were you aware that people were watching online?
People had said it to me afterwards. I mean, you never. Okay. It's put up on rip.ie, I think, the link. But you just presume people, if they're interested, will log in. It was only afterwards people had sent me messages and, you know, said she got a lovely send-off in considering the conditions. But it was just strange times, Joe.
And then the other thing is that the that phenomenon of the mass being televised, you put a link, is still exists, very much so, and will only grow and grow and grow. Okay, Helen, God rest Claire, your beautiful mother,
thanks,
and Robbie. Robbie, God rest Peggy
thanks,
as well.
Joe.
Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, let's go to this quickly. Where were you at this time last Tuesday? Were you in the vicinity of the beautiful Dooley's Hotel in the beautiful Offaly town of Burr? And were you driving an estate car? And when you got back into your estate car, did you notice a very different, indeed, beautifully fragrant perfume? And did you find something on the back seat? Mimi, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon.
What are we looking for? Quickly. We have to find it.
We are looking for a lady's long, full-length, woolen, multicoloured coat.
Okay.
It was, as you said, my mother and my sister travelled to Offaly last Tuesday. My sister had rang her to see would she like to go for a drive, and she said, "Oh, absolutely, I'd love it."
Okay.
So my sister had business to attend to in Dooley's Hotel, as you said, in Offaly. So fast forward, and they both came out of the hotel, and my sister walked ahead of her. And my mother got into this car, which was left open, but it was a replica of my sister's car. Same make, same model, same colour.
Okay.
Hopped in and put her coat in the back seat. And like my mother does always, she rang home to see was everything okay, just checking in on my dad. So then in the meantime, after the call, my sister rang and she said, "Where are you?" And she said, "I'm in the car waiting for you." And she said, "I'm in the car waiting for you." And she said, "Oh my God." So they looked around and my sister got out of the car and she ran over and she said, "Get out quick, you're in the wrong car." So fast forward again, when they got home, it was only then that it got back to Limerick, they realised the coat. My mother asked my sister, "Have you seen my coat?" And she said, no. And they both looked at each other. There was a short pause and it was at this moment that they realised, "Oh my God, the coat is in the back seat of this other car." So,
and the other car, we know what the other car, we obviously don't know Reg number, and there's a lot of them in the country. The car that she mistakenly got into, which was a replica of the car she should have got into, what was the make and mark?
It, Well, she managed to get the registration number. She briefly looked at it when she got into the car. It was a Dublin registration, and the make and model is silver Mercedes estate car.
Okay.
Now, my sister's car, her registration is in Dublin, but she just managed to see that.
Okay.
So they realised no code, nothing. So what were they going to do next?
So how do we know? This is the problem, Mimi. Your mother put the car in the back seat, put the coat in the back seat, as you normally, thinking it was your sister's car.
Yes.
That coat, in the meantime, could have fallen down on the in the footwell of the back seat, and the person driving the estate Mercedes around to or near Dooley's Hotel this day last week between 2 and 3, they might not know the coat is and is right behind them.
Exactly, because if they're anything like me, I'm always rushing. I'll hop into the car and I mightn't see the back seat for a whole week.
Yes.
But there's no mistaking it. They couldn't mistake it because the whiff of perfume, and she wears La Vie Belle by Lancôme. And
La Vie Belle.
It's so distinctive. It's absolutely beautiful, sweet, flowery, honey smell. Absolutely beautiful. So if they never saw it, they're going to be getting this waft coming from the back of their car all week. So, yeah. So this person is driving around with this car in the back of their coat, not knowing where this came out of. Now, I don't know, have they gone to... we were thinking, well, if it happened to someone, wouldn't they go to the guards or back to the hotel? But I was saying to my mother, maybe they came from Dublin, they were on a journey and they just stopped for a meal.
And but if it's a car, it's an estate car, so it might be used a lot for transporting kids, their friends, teenagers, their friends. And they, you see a coat in the back. See, you presume it's either belonged to one of your, someone you know, or as one of their friends. You don't automatically think this stranger had jumped into your car, disrobed and flung.
Exactly, Joe.
Flung her beautiful coat, her beautiful coat, with a magnificent into the back seat. It's not something you go looking for.
No, not at all. And you couldn't write this story. And even if you did ask your family or friends, is this your coat? They're all going to be looking at each other. And I'm sure the person, the driver of the car, is awake all night thinking, where did this coat come out of? So I said to my I rang my mother on Saturday, and I always listen to your show. I listen to your podcast. So I rang her and I said, any news of the coat? And she said, none whatsoever. She said, you know what? I'm going to give up now. But being the detective that I am, and I love doing my little bit of research, I said, if there's anyone going to find it or help us, well, it's Joe Duffy and his team.
And what colour is the coat?
Well, it's a long, full-length woolen coat, cream background, with splashes of black, blue, beige, and there's also a cream border.
Right.
Now, it had no collar. It was edge to edge. I don't know what design, what make it was. All I know is it was bought in Greta Gibbs. It was a boutique here in Limerick years ago. So, that's
so the car we're looking for is a silver estate Mercedes.
Yes.
And
D registration.
With a D-reg, D for Dublin, a D-reg, and it was in and around the town of Burr this day last week, at least between 2 and 3.
Yes, in Dooley's Hotel, Emmett Square, in Burr. And like I said, we've checked with the hotel and the guards and everything, nothing. But I was saying to my mother, sure, you know what? I checked all your podcasts during the week and I said, I might find the story, driver finds unusual coat in the back of their car. Nothing. So I said, you know what? I'll ring in yesterday.
Okay, we'll leave
I rang in yesterday and I gave them the details. So they said, oh, we'd love to hear the story. And I was quite nervous about it.
And
Mamie,
your mother's name is Mary, isn't it? Is it one of her favourite coats?
Oh, Joe, she has so many clothes.
Oh, wow.
Everything is her favourite. She is loves her style, makeup. The amount of clothes she has, we're taking after her, my sisters and myself, and even my brother. We all love the style. Okay. But by any means, it was a beautiful coat, full length, multicolored, beige background. And laced with beautiful perfume. So
very, very elegant.
Yeah, oh, my mother, she is the epitome of style and elegance.
Brilliant,
absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And she used to be a model, I see.
She was indeed in her heyday. She's a beautiful, tall woman. She still is lovely, auburn hair, and walks with such poise. And she really stands out in the crowd. She's beautiful, beautiful lady.
Okay, I don't want to ask, but the coat is very important to her.
Well, I rang her again yesterday and she said, look, don't put yourself through that because I was humming and hawing because I'd never been on radio and I was quite nervous. And she said, don't, let it go, let it go. And then I got a call this morning. I was doing my makeup. I was getting ready for work. And
You're right not to go back. You're right not to button up about it. Open up the story and see what we can get. Because the last similar story like this was about 8 months ago, and it was
a crate of wine.
Somebody coming out of a supermarket put up a crate of wine in the boot of the wrong car.
Absolutely. What a wonderful story.
And we got the wine back. The wine line is open.
Wasn't it great? But can you imagine the shock? But do you know what, Joe? If nothing becomes of it, it's, you know, it's light entertainment for the show, and your show is just a tonic anyway.
Okay. Well, tell Mary we're on the case.
And, I will indeed.
One of the little differences here, one, you don't live in Bor. You were visiting Bor.
So the word,
no guarantee the word has gone around Bor County Offaly. And two, with the dereg, the person who inadvertently got the coat in the back of their car, the silver estate Mercedes, may not know. They may not be from there either. So anyway, they may not.
So like I said, if anything, nothing becomes of it. It's great entertainment.
And
for the
what's the name of that beautiful perfume again?
It's called La Vie est Belle by Lancôme. You might see the ads on TV. Julia Roberts.
Okay.
She is the
La Vie est Belle. So if
perfume.
Now you see, you know what I'm worried about now, Mimi.
What's that?
That a woman gets, if it's a female driver, she gets in the car and she gets this magnificent perfume, La Vie est Belle.
This magnificent coat,
this really elegant, beautiful coat. And she says to her chap, where did that coat come from, Paddy?
Yes.
And she says, don't look at me. Well, we have an explanation.
What? Joe, that had crossed her mind.
Paddy is an innocent man. We have an explanation.
A poor man going home to his partner, and next thing she spots this beautiful lady's coat in the back seat with whiffing of perfume. Yeah. What does he say? What explanation? But, you know, these things happen, and it's a story that will live forever, won't it?
Okay, well, hopefully put it out there. 51551, Joe at RT. Kind regards to you, Mimi, and to your mother, Mary.
Thank
she sounds
so much,
a remarkable,
Joe.
Remarkable woman. Back,
she
well,
is indeed.
Going, there's this beautiful fragrance there, but back to people who lost their, unfortunately, their sense of smell during COVID. Jean Fitzgerald, good afternoon.
Hello there.
you say I'm very familiar with the loss of smell. Why?
Because I lost my sense of smell for years and years.
Wow. This is before COVID. Before COVID.
Long before COVID was even thought of. And now it has come back. I got COVID twice, and I wonder was it just the reverse of your callers?
So how long were you without the sense of smell, Jean?
Oh, 20 or 25 years.
Wow. And
it's no big deal.
No big deal. Why?
Because you just put up with it.
You just get up with it. Okay, and what about food and fragrance?
Yeah, food.
And
yeah, all that was gone. And I haven't got everything back, but I have a lot back.
Okay.
And in fact...
And when did you get it back?
Well, just gradually. About a year ago, I started to smell things again and taste things. And now I have such a heightened sense of smell,
yeah,
sense of whatever you say, smell, that some things are absolutely intolerable to me, like, for example, milk.
Okay. You cannot stand, now that you got your smell back, your sense of smell after a quarter of a century, you cannot stand the smell of milk, not sour milk, just milk.
Just ordinary milk, yogurt, anything to do with dairy products.
Okay, what else can you not stand?
Well, I think I told your
yeah, well, tell us.
Chap, that I now can't drink any wine, any red wine. There you are.
The bouquet from...
No, the taste.
Oh, the taste of it?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say if it was just the smell of it. So you lost, so your taste, your sense of taste and smell, smell disappeared for years, then you got it back, but your sense of taste went a little bit wonky, did it?
Well, it just, my sense of smell is also very heightened.
Now, if you say you can't...
And I did nothing in between, apart from got COVID twice.
Ah, so you got COVID. These are not consequential or sequential.
Well, I don't know what as well.
Yeah, well, so you got COVID, and after you got COVID, you got back the sense of smell, which had been gone long before COVID.
Long, long, long time ago.
And could you not drink milk through a straw, Jean? That would keep the smell away.
Oh, no. Oh, I would never drink milk. No.
You just never
I can't bear it. I never, no. I never liked the smell of milk, but it's now that I can't bear to be near it.
Yeah, but I'm thinking when you had no sense of smell.
When I had no sense of smell, that it didn't matter to me. I wouldn't drink it anyway. But I didn't object to it.
So how are you now? Is your you have a heightened sense of smell now, have you?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
And taste.
And are you glad you got the sense of smell back? Because you said to me earlier, it's no big deal.
No, it isn't a big deal.
That
you get used to it.
And what about food and appreciation of food and even smelling smoke and burning and safety?
Yeah, actually, somebody said that to me. What about the house went on fire? Well, it didn't ever, so I don't know. Anyway, there you are. And I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
the main thing is that's what I want people to hear. I know it can't apply to everybody, but that your sense of smell can come back, because that was a big thing.
Well, I was attending doctors. They never asked me about my taste. What my sense of smell or taste.
And did anyone in the family, Jean?
No.
No, okay.
No, this is just unique. I had sinus problems and asthma and things like that, and it went.
And are you glad you got your sense of smell back?
Well, I am and I haven't.
I thought you were going to say that. I am.
No, because... You know, there are smells that I just can't avoid.
Yeah. What's your favourite smell?
I don't know.
What's cinnamon or a fragrance?
Oh, I love those kind of... Yes, I like cinnamon. That's a very... So cinnamon or...
Vanilla. Well, if you were to light a candle.
No, I never lit one of those candles, scented candles. They make me cough.
Yeah.
So I do like real vanilla, but not artificial vanilla.
Okay.
And I can taste it.
And can you spot the difference between...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well done, Jean's great story. That's Jean Fitzgerald in Dublin. Dahi, good afternoon. Dahi applied. This is a... the Gardaí have to look at this now. This is a joke. Gardaí, Dahi, how are you, Dahi? Good afternoon. You first applied. Let's go. You first applied to the Gardaí, to join the Gardaí in 2022. And when did you get the letter back saying you're still being considered?
I got it there on the 5th of February.
That's a joke.
Well, I don't think it is. I think they're being serious.
I know that, but it is. Well, given that we're being told left, right and centre, they're spending hundreds of thousands, if not more, on an advertising campaign to get people to join the Gardaí. You applied in March 2022,
I applied.
And in 2025, they're selling you, your application is still under consideration.
Still under consideration.
Well, take us through it.
Well, I applied in 2022 and done all the phases, and I think the final stage is near enough, the fitness test.
Yeah.
And I passed that relatively easy enough.
Okay.
And went on then fairly quickly, done my medical and then the vetting. And the vetting was a slow enough process, but still had it done and completed.
This is the Garda vetting, and do you have to give them seed breed generation to make sure no one in your family ever had a parking ticket?
Yeah, it's wild enough. I had to go and get my grandparents, their air code and their occupation, everything, which was no real issue for me. I have a close family, so that wasn't an issue. But I suppose for others that'd be doing it, it mightn't have been as easy, and it could deter them from going any further.
So you had to get
you had to get
air codes for your grandparents who lived in houses that didn't have air codes.
Correct. Yeah. And I suppose the point what you made there, like if my grandfather, if it turned out he was a kingpin of some criminal organisation back in the day, was that going to stop me from being a member of the Guards? I don't know.
And was he maybe in Peaky Blinders or something back in a different country?
I don't know. So
you then got a call, that we won't say the rank, for an interview by a Garda in a different part of the country. And what was that chat about?
So I was brought into the barracks here in Sligo and had a chat. So basically I had to explain everything that was on pulse about me. Now, I was honest for a number of things back in my younger days. I wasn't the gentleman I am now.
Well, hang on. Did you ever have a conviction?
No, nothing like that.
You can be on pulse without a conviction. I didn't know that.
Of course you can, yeah. Just if anytime your name is taken, I think, even if you're done without tax, like, and that was the main thing. That I had no tax once. And then I suppose when I was younger, if there was a row on a night out, I might have been stuck in the middle of it.
Okay, but you were never convicted. Were you ever charged? Were you ever up in court?
No, nothing like that. Okay. No. But I left that thinking that I would be recommended. And
but you were asked, why is your name on pulse?
Well, you just had to kind of explain.
And did you say it was 10, 12 years ago? I was.
Yeah, well, my answer was there was a reason. I said there's a reason I'm sitting in front of you at 32 and not 22 because I had notions of applying when I left school, which I did. But I went into security, and it was through that work that I realised that, you know what, maybe I'm not ready to be a guard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I suppose if you're going to be a guard, you need
fair play. But you're pretty determined now, and you as you matured, did you say yourself? So, so where are we now? You applied back in March 22. Well, what year are we in now when you're doing this chat with the Garda up in Sligo?
Oh, that's a good question. That must be over a year and a half ago.
And what have you done in the meantime?
I haven't done anything. I've thankfully moved on with my life, and I have no interest. If I got the call now, and thank them, but no. But the reason, I suppose, the question is why am I on here? But I suppose there's plenty of others who might be in a similar boat and who are putting their life on hold, waiting. I know the Irish Daily Mail had an article about 400 successful candidates waiting on a call. I think it read that they were left in limbo land. And it said that they were waiting on up on 6 to 12 months, but the reality is it's more like 2 years for me, anyway. Three years.
And then 2 years, you're gone. You've moved on.
I've moved on, yeah. I'm very happy now with what I'm doing. I'm in a great gym in Sligo called ROM. I'm working there as a personal trainer.
Okay.
And I have a side gig then in entertainment.
I'll read out another our Daily Garda statement. Recent new joiners and prospective candidates have told us, just the Garda press, that our process is too long and that the point at which we make offers into the Garda College is too late, with candidates reporting insufficient time to organise their current work and family arrangements. This has resulted in candidates removing themselves from the process or deferring to later intakes. It has resulted. Well, there you go. It has resulted in people losing interest and resulted in a reduction in numbers. And if it is a crisis, they make it out to be. Well, then.
Well, I suppose when I sat down with my wife and we discussed me applying for the guards, one of the things we were looking at was the timeline. You know, life plan and everything. And that was a major factor in it. And we had kind of done our maths and our sums to see when I'd be out, qualified and all the rest. But sure, if you can't do that, and if anyone who's listening to this and they're hearing that it could be up on 3 years, sure, like they're not going to apply in the first place.
Now, they are saying we are going to do something about it. To improve our efficiency and the candidate experience, once a candidate has completed the stages of the selection process, the online assessment, the interview, the physical competency test, the drugs test, and stage one of the extensive vetting process, they are invited to take up a trainee position. So this is a new thing. They are advised that the vetting process will continue and may extend into the training period in order to attest as a full member of a Garda Síochána. The vetting process must be completed by no later than the end of the training period. Okay.
That sounds great in theory, but imagine you have your training nearly done and then it comes out that we go back to the grandfather story.
Yeah.
Your grandfather was
in Peaky Blinders,
It was in Peaky Blinders. You know, are they going to take you out now and say, thanks for the memories, chat to you later?
Okay. Sure. Well, hopefully people are aware of it. We have a new regime, so to speak, a new minister. I see a new assistant commissioner for Dublin, a young man called Paul Cleary, I think, from Dauchin.
Well, I suppose.
So hopefully there's a new brooms and start moving things along much quicker, because they are advertising heavily and we do need more Gardaí, and it is a great profession. Go to Mina Mahakadahi, joe@rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Come on, where were you this time last week? Where are you in Boran, County Offaly? Where are you driving a silver Mercedes estate car? Have you noticed since a beautiful fragrance coming from the back of the car? Have you noticed a beautiful, elegant, long woolen coat that's not yours or anyone belonged to you? If you do, we're looking for it back, please. And nothing will be said to anybody. It's not your fault. Somebody accidentally got into your car, sat in your car, sat in the passenger seat, thinking it was a car belonged to one of their relatives, disrobed, so to speak, of their beautiful coat, flung it into the back seat, and that's where it still is. If you are, or you know anyone, and we know that we believe it's a D-Reg, even though it was in Boer County, Offaly. It was a D-Reg Silver Estate Mercedes. If you have the code, will you give us a shout, please? joe@rte.ie. Now, back to this awful scenario that people are realising now how catastrophic it was for so many people. Fiona Fox. Fiona, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you? Are you well?
Good, thanks. And we're going back to March 2020, which is 5 years
ago. Back. Yeah,
exactly. This Saturday is the 4th of March. Yeah. What happened in your case?
So in our case, our lovely daddy, Tony Deveny, was diagnosed with dementia quite early on in his 60s. And we kept him home. Mammy kept him home for as long as she could. But he eventually had to go into a nursing home, a wonderful nursing home, I might add, in Mullingar. But unfortunately, he died on the 18th of April. So I'm going to say the Monday he was diagnosed with COVID, as was my sister, ironically, in London, who was nursing on a rehabilitation ward. So they both got diagnosed on the same day.
In two different parts of the world.
Yeah, imagine, yeah. Wow. And
that's a pandemic.
Daddy, like someone was saying earlier on, he was on the bottom floor of the nursing home, so we could pop up to the window, we could see him. He was managing quite well until the Friday we noticed he was on oxygen, but again, comfortable. And then on Saturday, I was back with the two little kids, and I got a call from a neighbour, rush over, so we did, and Daddy was very sick at 7:30, and he passed away with us all there at 8:30. So, yeah, we were able to go into him in boiler suit. I'll never forget that trauma of that, trying to figure out how to put on this PPE in a hurry.
Yeah.
But anyway,
And how did you manage? Because in March 2020, we were in lockdown.
We were in severe lockdown. Yeah. We were all terrified. But at the same time, you go into autopilot. The staff in the nursing home completely let us just... They came out to us. They handed us the PPE outside. We put everything on outside.
Okay.
And we made a decision to go into them, to be with them. And then after that, you were talking about, you know, the funeral and the surreal experience that it was. And I will never forget that. That was, we drove through Mullingar from the nursing home. Of course, we gave in clothes for Daddy to be dressed in. But, you know, the poor undertakers couldn't handle the body at that stage.
Yeah.
But we left them in anyway. And the undertakers were amazing. And we drove down through Mullingar. Now, Daddy had been a postman with On Post in Mullingar all his working life. They stopped the hearse outside the post office and there was eight of us in Mullingar Cathedral, including the priest and poor Daddy. Yeah. But when we came out the doors of the cathedral, I can't describe to you the vision that met us. So the post office in Mullingar is literally across the road from the cathedral and they all come out of the sorting office. One of Daddy's great friends had parked his post van in front of the hearse. They lined the Cathedral Avenue, down Bishopgate Street in Mullingar, the whole way out past Dunn's, the whole Mullingar Hockey Club, myself and my uncle played for them.
Mm-hmm.
They were out, the school that I teach in, the staff, children, parents, neighbours from Lynn Heights and Mullingar. I can't describe, now all socially distanced,
course,
just to wave at us and to acknowledge Daddy in a time where they couldn't do anything else. And as I say, my sister was in London. There was only the two of us in the family. She couldn't come home for the funeral, obviously. So our neighbours videoed this. Now, I've never been able to watch it back. Still a bit raw. But she was able to see the respect and the acknowledgement that he received from the town that day. And like that, when we went out to Ballyglass Cemetery, there was only the eight of us around the grave, as I say, including the priest. But everywhere we looked, over our shoulders, into the distance, were faces we knew. And it is just incredible how people rally together when they have to. And, you know, everyone was petrified. And they still come out socially distanced and did that for us. And we will never forget.
March the 24th. The March the 12th was the first announcement by the Taoiseach of the lockdown. School's gone.
Yeah. I remember I had fifth and sixth class and I sent them home with a week's work. Thinking they'd be back.
And March 24th, that's 12 days later, tens of thousands of people unable to work. The government announced a range of financial supports for businesses, the wage subsidy scheme, the PUP. Remember the pandemic unemployment payment? That was another word that came out of COVID, the PUP. The number of people in receipt of PUP was 605,000. So they were not in work. This is March 27th. We're now on to March 27th. As cases surged, the country was put into full lockdown.
Yeah.
Stay-at-home order was put in place and people were told they could only exercise within 2 kilometres of their homes.
Yeah.
And it just got stricter and stricter. And as I say, that was 5 years ago. Stay with God rest Tony Fiona, Tony Devaney. Sounds like an incredible man. And well done. By the way, and PUS kept going as well during it. And
they were brilliant.
They were brilliant. Joe Murray, thanks Fiona. Joe Murray, good afternoon.
Thanks, Joe.
You talk about Joe, the agony of COVID. Is Joe there? Joseph. Janice McLaughlin. Janice, good afternoon.
Hi Joe, how are you?
Okay, your mother got COVID. In March,
she
was it 2020, 5 years ago.
She was diagnosed 19th of March.
Wow.
And she was taken to Beaumont. And then she died on the 1st of April, 2020. So it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Because nobody knew what COVID was, you know.
Yeah,
it was just too early days.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hospital was the hustle and bustle in Beaumont Hospital was unbelievable. It was really scary when you got up onto the COVID ward. It was really scary trying to get on, making sure that nobody touched off one another.
And
it was really hard for the nurses as well, I have to say. Yeah. Really hard for them to cope.
Because do you remember the whole thing of the perspiration that people were going through?
Yeah, and the whole sheer bedlam of the whole ward, that long ward. and all the cubicles. It's a memory that will stay with me, you know.
And even when you mentioned, Janice, when you mentioned PPE, I remember because I was here every day during we broadcast from RTE. When you mentioned PPE, what that sparks, do you remember that Pascal Donoghue, at the time, the Minister for Public Expenditure, he appealed to Bono of U2 to use his contacts in Asia and that part of the world to try and get us PPE gear.
Yeah, I do. I remember that.
Such was the panic. Yeah.
It was pandemonium now in Beaumont, you know.
And the whole world was shut down. And how could you... what was the obsequies like for your mother? What?
Well, it was terrible, really, you know, because she was 88, but she was a good 88, you know, full of life, absolutely full of life. And family were due to come from Canada in April. They came home every year to see her anyway, but they were due home in April to see her, and they couldn't travel from Canada, you know. But I do have a memory of her talking on WhatsApp. Or what's called the other one? Anyway, they could see me.
Zoom or Skype.
This is
or
on the 31st of March.
Yeah.
And we have it on thing, her waving to them. And the next morning she was gone. That's how quickly it took her, you know.
So, incredible.
It was terrible, really. And then we couldn't dress her. Like the lady before you, the shock of that you couldn't dress her, you know, was unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, that you could.
Because we were up, went upstairs in our home and said we'd pick out something nice for her to wear. Beautiful clothes. And the undertaker rang and said, "We're very sorry, but we're not allowed to dress her." And that, of course, in your head is like the visions of your mother going from Beaumont Hospital in the body bag to a funeral home.
Untouchable.
You know, yeah.
And as you say, you mentioned Canada, they were in lockdown. New Zealand, you couldn't enter or leave New Zealand. You couldn't enter New Zealand. They had a complete shutdown. And obviously it was the same.
Have been better for us, hindsight, I suppose, is a great thing, isn't it? Maybe we should have not let anybody in either, you know?
Yeah. I say, this Mike, I know Jessica Ardern, who was the Prime Minister of New Zealand at the time, she got a lot of kudos for the complete and total and absolute lockdown in New Zealand. Now, maybe they can, given their location, they might be better able to do it than we would. Stay with us, Janice, and God rest Phyllis. Joe Murray, Joe, good afternoon.
Thanks,
your mother, Bye. Grace. Thanks,
good
Janice.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you? Yes, indeed. My mother, Grace, it was agonising and a savage time, to be honest. She was in hospital and for a couple of months, and we had to queue outside the hospital for I'd say we were waiting well over an hour every night to queue to get in for 10 minutes. And she had just been diagnosed with dementia, and she couldn't see me.
Yeah.
And we were losing her as it was, you know. And then a couple of months later, she was transferred to a nursing home, which again was one of the most difficult decisions I have ever made in my life.
Okay.
It was horrific, you know. This was a woman that she was 93 or 94 at the time. You know, very independent, great woman, you know.
How could she understand, Joe, the restrictions and the fact that you couldn't touch and couldn't hug?
No, she could not. Actually, she cried and because I couldn't go near her.
Yeah.
And I remember when we brought her to the nursing home she was transferred. The director of nursing in the nursing home, who again, like other people have said, they were absolutely marvellous and very understanding and very sensitive to the situation.
Yeah.
But they brought me around to the window, and they wouldn't even open the window of her room. And she had her arms outstretched, screaming to take me home, Joe, take me home.
Yeah. As you said.
It was just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking stuff, you know.
It was a savage time, as you used
to. Oh, savage time. Absolutely savage. You know, it progressed then, you know, and she was allowed to be in the conservatory. And I was telling your researcher that they gave her a mobile phone. And I would ring the mobile phone. I was outside the conservatory, again, in all weathers, you know, and which didn't matter because I got the opportunity to see her. And she just wasn't able to use a mobile phone, you know, and it would be on the floor more often than it would be on her lap. And you'd be talking to thin air, really, but sure, you got to see her, you know. And then what happened in our case is before she died, well, I have a twin brother in the USA and he came home and he was outstanding. But for the first time ever, Joe, I got COVID after, you know.
Okay.
And 3 days before she died, I had gotten COVID. So I couldn't go in and I wouldn't go in for fear of spreading it around the rest of the nursing home. And I never saw her again.
Oh, God.
Because she, like that, she was taken from a body bag into a coffin and she died on the Monday night at 8 o'clock and she was buried Wednesday morning. And so it was agonising. It was agonising, but it was the way it was, you know.
Well, let's hope.
It was the way it was. But,
well, God rest her. And let's hope there's lots of... I know there's lots more research going on into the pandemic, but into pandemics, and hopefully we don't become too complacent if God forbid, it happens again. And any of the programmes I was listening to at the beginning of the year where they had medics on, one of the things they did... worry about was another pandemic. Anyway, hopefully, but as you say, the word you use was savage, and it's such a people in one sense have parked it, so to speak, and in another sense a lot of people haven't processed how awful and savage it actually was. So God rest your mother, Grace. Joe, she sounds like an amazing amazing woman, and God bless you. Joe with RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Since we mentioned this yesterday, about 5 years since the first COVID, the first lockdown in Ireland, one of the things that surprised me is the number of people who were deeply upset by the regulations around funerals. And for example, we mentioned, Fiona mentioned, was it about Tony Devaney, the postman, Mullingar Cathedral, one of the most beautiful buildings in the country. Anyone who's been in Mullingar Cathedral, the last time I was there was for the funeral of a great pal, a great man, Lee McGonigal. But it's absolutely massive. You could fit 10,000 people in it and they wouldn't be beside each other. I just wonder where it's coming up again and again, surprisingly, that the funerals were they too the numbers too strict? Could we have done it a better way? Paul Hardy, you want to talk about your mother's funeral as well.
Joe, how are you doing? Yeah. Nice to talk to you, pleasure.
Likewise. Your mum, you say very hard to grieve without a proper funeral.
Joe, it is very hard.
Okay.
You know, there was very few at the funeral in Dublin. I have to say, I take my hat off to the neighbours. They stood along the street when the court, you know, when we drove up. But we always kind of, you know, there was talk at the time, you know yourself, about having a get-together after, you know, that hasn't happened yet anyway, Joe. Maybe it will one day. But, so just very, very, still very raw for me and all the family.
And what did the, many of you were allowed, 10 people in the church, wasn't it? Max.
It was probably, around that, Joe, just maybe a few over, a few neighbours, stragglers came in, very good of them. But, you know, it's just like I had to travel from the country. I live in Wexford and I couldn't bring my wife and the kids. I had to go alone.
Yeah. And people,
I was glad in a way because I didn't want to upset.
Yeah.
And that couldn't take any risks either, Joe, you know?
Yeah, and remember the... The did your mother, Maureen, did she wasn't COVID that she died from? She was suffering.
No, Joe. Okay. No, she was in Beaumont, and she was fearful, hugely fearful of the COVID. But they found cancer in the liver and the spinal cord, and you know, there was no coming back. Really, she had a few months. My brothers were great. They got the house done up. They're in the building trade. They got the house done up, tailored for her, and she was home then. And we were lucky, you know. I'm grateful that we were able to have her home. And poor old dad. Yeah. And I know you know my dad, Cyril Hardy.
Oh, of course.
Great swimmer.
Legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Legendary, Cyril.
He misses her so much, but as you can imagine, and we all do, but, you know, it's just... Suppose it's sad that we couldn't have a kind of a proper send off either, you know. She was a lovely character, and she's from the west of Ireland on Spitale, Joe.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know it. And she's my aunt Peg, and Noreen, and Steve, and Tom still alive. And you know, the family were so loving, always was all. And just, you know, it's just hard. You know, I just heard the show, and I said I had to ring in, Joe. Yeah. You know.
God rest her, Maureen Hardy, she was known as, and Raheny. I presume she was living in Raheny then.
Raheny,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, she lived all her married life in Raheny, you know.
Okay, well, God.
That's my grandmother used to say, Rahenic, you know.
Well, God rest her, but Paul, it's coming up again and again about the restrictions on the few. I know times were savage Joe said to me.
God love that poor man. I was listening to him, the lady, you know, earlier. It was savage, Joe, really, you know.
Well, God rest her. God rest Maureen. And kind regards to Cyril. Well, I see the his very handsome sons every morning in the pool in Westwood. You're a great family. Yeah. You're a great family, and your mother, and indeed Cyril, I hope get the full credit.
I just said, Joe, I'd ring you because my mother and father deserved it always. You know, they're great parents always. And
well said. Well put, Paul. Talk to you soon, Paul. That's Paul Hardy remembering Maureen Hardy from Raheny, who died in early 2020, and again the funeral restrictions were savage and justifiably a lot of people would argue, but I'm just, the funeral's coming up again and again in big churches, empty big churches. Nora Spears. Nora, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, good afternoon, Joe.
We're
How
going
are you?
To 20 good thanks it went the lockdowns the rolling lockdowns went on from March, the beginning of March, which is beginning this Saturday, beginning of March 25 years ago till the beginning of February in 2022. Now, your father was admitted to hospital when, Nora?
He was admitted about the 10th of January 2021, and he died on the 19th of January in Mayo University Hospital. Yes, and our four siblings, we all got COVID, so we had to wait until we were clear from COVID to have his funeral. So his funeral was held on the 24th of January, according to the, you know, the regulations, and it was very sad and bewildering. But we had great support from our community. We live in North Mayo, and They met the funeral cortege in Newport, and we had them all the way towards the church. They stood outside the church in the cold weather. The support we had from Mayo University Hospital was good, phone calls, and our parish priest, Father Chris. So among all the sadness and everything, there was comfort, but it was very, very difficult to reconcile 10 people at a funeral with what we would normally have.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, Nora, did you mention that everyone was diagnosed with COVID?
Our four siblings,
What did that mean in terms of the funeral?
Well, we had to wait until we were clear of COVID until we had a funeral, because we were our four siblings, we needed to be at the funeral. So he died on a Tuesday. So we were all okay to go to the funeral on the Saturday.
That story earlier just shows how widespread it was. 10,000 people died. the population of Kildare Town, the population of Tremor. They this is on top of, as we're discovering and hearing, normal, so to speak, normal death rates in any society, which are high anyway, at the best of times. An extra 10,000 people passed away. And like, was one of the earlier callers said, I got COVID in Dublin the same day as my sister got it in London, which reminds you of what a pandemic it was.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and you can say the same. There's one word you can say now around the world that everyone understands. It's COVID. It's COVID. Now, whether everyone is... I know there's an inquiry in the UK, but the full results haven't been... Learnings. Not blamings, learnings. Haven't been processed as of yet. So I know a number of people were sceptical about whether we should have an inquiry here, but listening over the last few days, I definitely think it should be part of the process. I don't mean full of lawyers and that, but I definitely think people's testimony should be heard. I really do. And obviously with 5 years or whatever has passed.
Four years has passed.
Since your 5 years since the beginning of the pandemic. Okay, Nora, what was your father's first name?
He was Neil, and he was a real gentleman. It was so sad at the time.
God rest him. Thanks indeed. That's Nora Spears remembering her father, Neil. Broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Rachel Graham, Niall McMonigan on sound. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Cozy up with the new arrivals, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.